for a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we are in studio for the second volume of the rebooted version of the show.
Yes.
Because reboots are still cool, even if they've been happening for like 10 years now.
Heck yeah. You know, it's like, and it's Western season in Texas because the rodeo's coming up. So why not boot with a reboot?
Yeah. You know, I wonder what, like, are like these new millennials, like, and what are they going to do?
I don't know.
It seems like rebooting TV is becoming the thing now. That must be the millennial thing.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that they're going to reboot Magnum P.I. What was it? Murphy's Law.
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
It's like, what the hell? They're rebooting Roseanne.
Yeah, I saw that.
It might have already started.
I want to say it started.
Yeah, I don't know. Not really. It's like, so I guess rebooting, now they're getting away from movie reboots. They're going to reboot television.
Yeah.
You know.
They've done horrible things to Teen Titans and the new Ben 10. I don't like the new animation.
Okay, here's my thing on Teen Titans Go. Yeah. I think Teen Titans Go, though, once you really get into it, it's aware of itself that it's corny and cheesy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's why it works. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not the Teen Titans you want because it's not the Warner Brothers animation we've come to expect, but the kids love it.
I mean, the kids do love it.
It's one of the most popular shows on the Cartoon Network. I mean, you know, and it's 200 episodes already. It's a phenomenon. It's got a movie coming out this summer.
Oh, that's right.
Teen Titans Go to the Movies. So, hey, someone did something right there.
It's working.
They're smarter than us. We haven't come up with that.
That's true.
You know?
And what's funny is I'm usually the one that says something like that.
Right.
I'm usually the guy that's like, hey, they're the ones that are doing something that's working.
But not us. We're just amateur podcasters.
That's right. You know what? Because we're local. We bring it to the little guy.
That's right.
You guys out there.
Damn the big man, power to the little man.
You don't see Walmart corporations making podcasts about Batman and Enter the Dragon, talking about Roseanne for like 5 seconds.
That's true. And so, you know, we've rebooted the show where we bring you movies, like, and we talk about old movies, which is, man, we're just trend copiers.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
A copier thing on podcast. A lot of podcasts talk about retro movies now, but we like film. And
yeah, we're movie buffs,
and we just felt like the first volume had run its course, and here we are with a new volume. And we thank anyone that's listening to the Batman episode,
yes,
which is still playing on TrustMeOnJedi.com and on your podcast apps, Google Play, iTunes, all the good stuff. And coming very soon, probably in mid to late March, the RebelRadioPodcast.com. So you're not only going to be able to find the show on TrustMeOnJedi and your podcast apps, you're going to have one URL where you can go to find the Rebel Radio podcast.
Now it's a little less confusing.
Yeah, it'll be coming really soon. And we've got a new logo in the works, we hope. So
yes,
some new things happening on the Rebel Radio Podcast, and we are going to keep going strong all the way until
the break of dawn.
The break of
dawn.
It reminds me of a song.
Of
like, there should be a break of dawn. There probably is a song that says,
to the break of dawn. Yeah, something like that.
So what movie are we talking about today, Matt? One of your favorites.
Oh, Enter the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon.
Bruce Lee's legacy.
Yeah, you know, this movie is probably a lot of people's first experience ever with Bruce Lee.
Yes.
And he had films out before then, but people may have not noticed him as much. This was like the first movie that was really made for Western audiences.
Well, didn't they have trouble making it to the States for some reason?
Some of his other films did.
Yeah.
This one was a Hollywood production, so I think it was a little more ready. The other ones had trouble making it to the States. You would see him, I imagine if you lived in L.A. or New York where they had art house studios in the 70s,
mm-hmm,
that played exploitation films and things like that, you
probably
might
see that
have seen these films. But you might not have seen it in small town America in the Midwest somewhere. They probably weren't going to air a Bruce Lee film,
mm-hmm,
you know, in the 60s and 70s. And the thing that makes Enter the Dragon a big deal, too, is not only is it his first Western film, or the film that was made for Western audiences, it was also his last film that he filmed. There were other movies of his that were released after he died. Some of them had been previously filmed in China already.
Yeah, Chinese Connection, Big Boss.
Or they were in the works when he passed on. Of course, he was famously killed at early age, too, he killed by an on-set accident also?
No, he had a heart attack.
That's right, yeah.
While he was, I think he was going to a set.
But he was on set, yeah, very similar to his son.
Yeah.
And that makes Enter the Dragon has kind of become the Bruce Lee go-to movie, even though there are other great ones out there, Game of Death, Chinese Connection,
Big Boss.
Big Boss. I actually haven't seen that one. It's on Prime. I need to watch it. Way of the Fifth.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's funny that this movie is probably, in some ways, a lot less action than some of his other films. But this was one they chose to make for Western audiences. And it's because, and Bruce Lee did that on purpose. He wanted to show Chinese culture and things in this film and not just an action film. He was trying to make it about story too. And it was directed by Robert Klaus, of course, starred Bruce Lee, John Saxon, and Jim Kelly as your main characters. And a very young Bolo Ying. I don't know if I'm saying his last name
right.
Yeah. The big dude from Bloodsport. You know, that's what everybody remembers him from.
It's just like, you know, Bruce Lee said in this movie, boards don't hit back. And he says, brick, don't hit back.
Right.
In Bloodsport.
And so you're the Bruce Lee guy. You know, what are your thoughts, your initial thoughts on, is Enter the Dragon one of the first ones you saw as a Bruce Lee fan?
Was the first movie I saw. We had it on VHS. We also had Way of the Dragon, which kind of just shows like a little.
I said Way of the Fist. I meant Way of the Dragon.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Fist of Fury is what I was thinking. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You must correct me on these things.
It's okay. You combined two movies. But yeah, those were two that my dad owned, because my dad had, you know, martial arts movies, and those were his two favorites. So I had to watch those mandatory. I really like him in this movie. It shows the original one didn't have the philosophical intro to it. Whenever the 25th anniversary came out, Linda Lee, his wife, wanted to show that philosophical side to him. And that he wasn't just a fighter, but he was a spiritual, you know, thinker of martial arts.
Right. And I read that they actually had shot it, that Bruce Lee directed that part, but they didn't put it in the film because the Warner Brothers didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then later, now we see it, you know, and it's, I think it's in every version now. I think, you know, if I even, you know, did the HDX version on Vudu really quick. And it's like, that's the scene that's in there. So right. That's like mandatory now. Everyone loves that scene.
It's funny because, I grew up, you know, watching a lot of my movie experiences growing up were Saturday afternoon cinema, you know, because now we live in a society where we work during the week and on weekends, we're not home a lot. We're running errands. We're trying to get things done. But I grew up, we stayed home. We'd watch our Saturday morning cartoons. We'd watch a movie. Dad would grill on Saturdays or whatever. Yeah. Sundays you'd go to church. You know, you did go out to a movie or something, or maybe the grocery store, but you didn't do as much, as we do now. And so I remember watching a lot of martial arts films on Fox 26 or whatever in the afternoons growing up. And I probably saw Bruce Lee movies, but being young, I probably didn't click who this guy was. And when I got older, I was like, man, this guy, you know, I've seen him in a lot of movies, and I started realizing who Bruce Lee was. And Enter the Dragon is probably the one that I'm most familiar with too, because it was the most accessible to American audiences. Mm-hmm. You could walk into a Blockbuster Video and find copies of Enter the Dragon. You might not find the Chinese Connection, you know? And it is certainly his most well-known film. I'm not expert enough to say if it's his best film. I do like the film, but have I seen better martial arts films? Yes.
Yes.
You know, but this also is still a very good movie.
Oh yeah.
And go ahead.
No, it's held up all this time. You know, it's still widely, you know, revered. You know, as soon as this subpar Bruce Lee movie that's come out, you know, the documentary, not really a documentary, the adaptation of how Bruce Lee came up. You know, now that this is released, of course, every time you go on Vudu or you go to rent a movie, or you go to Walmart now, they have all the old films of his.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, you might have seen Big Boss, because that's the one it starts out with him fighting Chuck Norris. Okay. That's the one where it starts out, and then it goes away, and he's on a set. It shows that he's on a set.
And isn't there one film, because, like, I know Game of Death, that they filmed together. Isn't there a film, if I remember right, where it wasn't really filmed for that movie, but it was leftover stuff he had done with Chuck, and they use it in the movie? Is that Big Boss?
Yes, that's Big Boss.
Okay, I remember reading that.
Yeah, they took parts from movies. They made it look like he's like Johnny Cho, or I forget his actual name in the movie, but he's not Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee is the character he plays, which is, it's pretty funny. and it's, you know, they take some from Chinese Connection. They take some from Fist of Fury, But he's basically got to pay back this media Hollywood boss. And there's a girl that gets in the mix, and this doctor that supposedly, you know, pronounced him dead, you fake his death. He comes back, he beats all their butts.
Right.
And he has to fight the people from Game of Death back, you know, back to back in the movie too. So that's a really cool one.
So Enter the Dragon, for people who you've probably seen it, if you're listening to this, if you haven't, it revolves around three main characters, and they enter a tournament to find out where this opium trade is coming from initially.
Yes.
The FBI, I guess, or the whoever it is, asks FBI. Lee, Bruce Lee's character's name, Lee, to go in and do this. But he also comes across with two other people. John Saxon's character is Roper, and he's trying to get away from the mafia and clean up his debts. So he enters this tournament thinking he's going to win money or something like that. And then Jim Kelly, who plays Williams, is a fighter, I think, that's trying to, you know.
Yeah, I think he just wants to prove himself. So it's like, Jim Kelly, it's his fighting style is very unique. But he, you know, Jim Kelly, he's had all those. He's Black Belt Joe, Black Samurai.
Yeah, he was a former karate champion.
Yeah. And that's the kind of people that that Bruce Lee liked to invite on his sets.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that he trapped on a boat was actually from New Zealand. He was a martial arts champion from New Zealand. And then Wall, who you thought that I mistook for
Robert Wall. Yeah,
yeah, Robert for Chuck Norris. Robert Wall was also a karate champion, and he liked to promote other martial artists. That's what Bruce Lee liked to do, no matter what style you were from. And even one of the extras, Robert, man, I had his name memorized. His name was Robert. Something. This is horrible for a podcast. Me forgetting his last name. But he also, this guy was in the movie, and he ended up, he's Korean, and he ended up choreographing Mortal Kombat and Karate Kid 1 and 2. So it's,
I read that somewhere too.
It's cool what has stemmed from this movie, you know, when you see the careers of some of these guys.
And
obviously Saxon, you know, he would later be known for slasher films.
Mm-hmm. It is remarkable. It was filmed with only a budget of $850,000. Even in 1973, that's a low budget. Because in the 70s, films have started getting those million-dollar budgets. You know, French Connection, those kind of movies were costing
this was Warner
several
Brothers,
million
right?
to make. It was Warner Brothers. So under $1 million budget is still a low-budget film for even back then. But it went on to make like $90 million globally.
Yes.
It was a huge hit. And $90 million now is...
Nothing.
We get opening weekends of movies to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but back then in 1973, that's a lot of money across the globe.
Big time.
In today's standards, I don't know what inflation would be, but I would imagine $400 or $500 million, probably.
Has to be.
You know?
Has to be. I would put money on that. I'd bet my paycheck on that. There we go. Yeah, man. And it still continues to make money today.
As far as the performances of this film, it's for a martial arts film, you know, sometimes you watch them, it's all about the choreography and the action scenes. But in this film, it seems like the actors, I have to say, other than John Saxon, it seems they don't mail it in. Like, Bruce Lee's trying really hard to put on best performance, but he always did.
Yes.
Jim Kelly, he tries really hard. The guy who plays Han, which is a bad guy, they all really put on good performances in this movie. John Saxon, though, has openly admitted over the years that he was enjoying it at first, and about a few weeks into shooting, he really was hating it.
Yeah, because
and I think that's why
scenes.
You can tell he kind of mails in his performance this time.
Mm-hmm.
He did it out of respect for Bruce Lee because he was friends with him and he wanted to do a Bruce Lee film, but you could tell he gets further in the movie, he's like, this sucks. You know?
Mm-hmm. It's not just because Williams died and he's in a poo-poo mood. It's because, you know, and the hookers are gone.
He was really agitated.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And they really had to work with the camera angle for Saxon because that is him kicking. And if you can tell, it's like...
doesn't look as fluid.
Yeah, it is not as fluid. He's he's pretty rigid. But it looks like he's flexible enough to do jump front kicks, which he threw a pretty nice jump front kick there.
Right.
You know, especially for a white dude, you know... Congrats, you know, dibs to you. You know, one black belt to another.
And going back to the hookers, you know, they hired real hookers for the film.
I didn't know that.
They couldn't find girls to play the part, so they went out and hired real hookers to play the hookers.
That is awesome.
You know, in the movie, and so those girls on that screen are really, you know, are real hookers.
Do you think Saxon could have played a James Bond? I feel like when those girls walked into the room,
he has and a look, making but, the drink. But is he British in real life?
He's,
I don't know.
I don't think he's British, but it's like he's British got the look, Bond. Right? And then she walks in. Tania walks in and she's like, "Which one do you?" She's like, "Well, have you made your decision?" He's like, "I already have." And he looks at her and she's like, "Wise decision." Like. Yeah, like yeah. I'm the boss of these hoes for a reason.
I can see that, him having that Bond look. For Enter the Dragon, you know, there's some great sequences in the film. Despite it being a little more story-based martial arts films,
yeah.
The fight at the end is extraordinary, you know, with all the characters. A lot of choreography going on there, and I was reading that every bit of it was choreographed, that they did not just tell extras in the background to just look like you're throwing punches, that they took the time to choreograph the entire large fight scene in the courtyard at the end.
And he actually did punch Jackie Chan in the face.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant to, but he did on accident. Well,
for people that don't know, Jackie Chan's in the movie three times.
Yes.
Dies in the middle of the film.
Yes.
But then he comes back as an extra at the end.
Yep.
And he's at the beginning when his sister is attacked. He plays one of those characters. And a very young Jackie Chan. I don't even think he had any notoriety at the time yet.
No, he was a student of Bruce Lee's at the time, and he said that, you know, come on. On a small role in this film, and you know I'll bring you on as a bigger role in another film. And of course,
he wasn't able to keep his promise. But I remember reading that Jackie was able to get the role of Drunken Master in that because of his work with Bruce. And I guess the person had known Bruce, that knew Jackie, and let him come onto the film. And
yes,
of course, the rest is history. From there, Jackie Chan has gone on to be a huge international star in his own right. And rightfully so.
Yes. You know,
I'm sure eventually we'll do a Jackie Chan movie on the show.
Oh, definitely. I mean,
you know.
Rumble in the Bronx. I mean, the Street Fighter scene from Rumble in the Bronx.
Yeah, Rumble in the Bronx is awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
the hovercraft.
To not go on a rant here, I actually saw Rumble in the Bronx on the big screen.
Really?
When they had its U.S. release.
Darn it.
And it was really cool. And so... anything else about the performances or highlights? Any highlights you have of the film? I picked the courtyard scene. Did you have a highlight of the film?
Oh, the cave scene, man. The cave scene.
Yeah.
Whenever he's going from weapon to weapon, he starts with the bow staff, and then he gets the extrema, and then he gets the nunchuck. The nunchucks. And it's the iconic...
Right.
I can't even flip nunchucks that way. I'm only good with one
hand.
Well,
you're not Bruce Lee.
I am not Bruce Lee. So that I do have, you know, that handicap, you know, but... I fancy myself with a pair of nunchucks. I can do some things, but I suck with my left hand. And Bruce is just ambidextrous with them, man. He's just they fly. And I think those are real chucks because that's a chain.
Various weapons, you know, when he found out he was making a movie for Western audiences, you know, he wanted to use guns. He's like, you're basically having me playing a secret agent. I want to shoot someone.
Yeah.
And they were like, nope. You're not doing it. And he fought against it. And Warner Brothers was like, no, we're making a martial arts film. You're not using a gun. So some of his agitation is real. Like, he's really agitated that he has to use his hands and stuff because he really wanted to do a movie with a weapon.
Or the art of fighting without fighting.
Yeah, exactly. we talked about Jackie Chan and the hookers. There are some other unique things about this film, like the fact that it was filmed with no sound. And that they talked on screen so the actors could hear each other, but they didn't use boom mics or anything.
Yeah.
They went in and they filmed the sound later. They re-recorded all their dialogue. And which actually was pretty common for films with foreign characters and things back then. A lot of the Clint Eastwood spaghetti westerns were filmed like that. Clint Eastwood would talk English. The other actors would talk Italian, then they would go in and dub the English voices over. And that's why people, you go watch The Good and the Bad and the Ugly in those films that Clint Eastwood did, his mouth is matching his words, then the Italian actor won't match.
Yeah.
Because they go back in and film it. And that's just...
That makes sense.
And that's how they did it back then, you know. And same with some Bruce Lee films. There's several martial arts films you watch where you can tell if an actor's speaking English or not, you know. And the whole famous people make fun of over the years, the dubbing the lines where the mouth is still moving and the English words are already done, you know.
Oh, man. We used to make those jokes all the time, like Thunderbirds. Was it Thunderbirds where they the Japanese translation wasn't that great and the puppets would keep talking?
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, they had to halt production of the film, I know, because they actually did find a body that washed up on the shore. Like, a body washes up on the shore, you know, during one of the scenes when they're talking about, you know, women turning up missing, you know, dead from the island. And you know, lo and behold, they're on the film set, a dead body of a woman does turn up.
Right.
And that was kind of freaky.
Yeah. And then this, I think I read too somewhere, they there was also a couple weeks missed because I think a lot of the actors got sick from reading that. So there was some misproduction there. And another interesting thing, Warner Brothers didn't like want to call it Enter the Dragon. They wanted to call it either Han's Island or the Deadly Three because of the three stars.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing about Bruce is, as much as he wanted to train people and show people things, he was also egotistical.
Yes.
He was on set. He was a star. Like, John Saxon walked on the set thinking he was the star of the film. He didn't realize, he thought that this was Bruce Lee's introduction to American audiences and that Bruce was playing a bit part. And Bruce apparently had a bit of a fit over. It's like, no, I'm the star. And they, Warner Brothers had to go tell John Saxon, no, you're not the star. And John was okay with it.
Yeah.
But Bruce also had a lot of fits, like if choreography didn't go right. And he's been known for that, not just this film, a lot of films. So he didn't want to be called the Deadly Three. He's like, no, this is my movie. They're not getting billing with me. You know, they're getting second billing. This is my film. And since, I guess, the dragon was a nickname of his.
Yes.
So that's why they call it Enter the Dragon. And of course, it doesn't matter now because it's a legendary film.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, in fact, you mentioned before pre-show that it's culturally observed by the Film Institute as important to our history. And so Bruce is known, as much as he is was a philosopher and was to teach people, he also had a bit of an ego.
Oh, yeah. And with all due respect, I mean, he did. He had every bit to be egotistical. Well,
and I agree, but I think on a Hollywood standards, he didn't know Hollywood yet. So to come out, yeah, you were a huge star internationally and over there, but when you come here to make American films, he probably didn't quite know how that worked yet, you know, that you had to kind of earn your place. It's kind of like even now when Matt Damon made Saving Private Ryan, he wasn't a star yet, so he didn't get top billing over Tom Hanks and all those guys.
That's true.
You kind of have to earn your place in Hollywood.
Yeah, Matt Damon technically earned his stripes on that one.
Right. And even though Good Will Hunting had come out by that point and he ended up getting an Oscar for it, but they didn't know when they filmed Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other thing. Any other things you have on Enter the Dragon as far as unique facts? It's an older film, so we really don't have deleted scenes to talk about because back then that kind of stuff wasn't as popular.
The beginning was technically a deleted scene. So we'll talk about a little bit of his philosophy. You know, he says they ask him, you know, what his master, he says, you know, what is your technique? What is the highest technique you hope to achieve? To have no technique. It's like, you know, what, describe a perfect fight. A perfect fight should be like a small play, but played very seriously. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. You wouldn't think of it that way. It's like, how should a fight go? Well, I should win. It's like, okay, well, it should be, and playing, you know, martial arts, sometimes it feels like a dance.
Right.
Sometimes it's choreographed. So I think that speaks to how martial arts is. It's kind of fluid and choreographed. He speaks to it being like water, and, you know, and he says whenever his opponent expands, he contracts. When his opponent contracts, he expands. When I see an opening, I do not hit. It hits on its own. And I'm like, that describes how badass Bruce was.
That's deep, man.
I mean, they're in the ending credits of Game of Death, there's commentary. In the special edition, there's commentary by a person who, an agent of Chuck Norris's at the time, and they, you know, he was asked, you know, hey, what did Chuck say about the Game of Death? You know, who would have really won Game of Death? And he said, oh, well, Bruce would have won. He's like,
right.
Bruce would have won. People are like, no, Chuck Norris would have won. Chuck Norris was awesome for a white dude.
Yeah.
But he was definitely second place when it came to Bruce, especially after Chuck taught him how to kick high.
That's kind of why I texted you about Chuck Norris. When I thought it was funny that we knew we were recording today.
Yes.
About Bruce Lee, and I saw that Chuck in the news for suing CBS over Walker Texas Rangers streaming rights.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so would you have changed anything about this movie?
I don't think you can. I mean, yeah. So many. I mean, think of the movies that have kind of drawn from this. I mean, the comedy movie Balls of Fury.
Oh yeah,
it's like, you know, and there's anytime that there's a spoof, you know, kind of like TV movie that's made, you know, off of this, like a tournament, and then they get their own rooms, and then they get catered, and then it's on an island that's secluded. It's like, you know, there's a lot of mystique from this movie that's adapted to other movies. Right. It was inspiring to everybody, comedies, you know, TV shows, everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I would change anything either. I guess watching it now in modern times, I might have, I guess 1973, I don't understand the time. Yeah. I would take out, they treat Jim Kelly's character a bit racist. You know, they use a certain derogatory term.
Yeah, they do.
There are literally almost monkey sounds coming out of his mouth when he's fighting. And you know, and you watch that now, and it's like, especially the times we're had in you know, Rebel Radio, we never get political because that's not us. But no. In the trying times we're in right now, it feels weird to watch that, and I would take that out of the film if I could now. That's probably it. Otherwise, I think it's a perfect film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's a very good film. It, like I said, it might not be everyone's favorite Bruce Lee movie because some people might want more action, but it might be his best movie because it is very Western influenced and it's a much more plot oriented film than just let's get to the fighting. Because a lot of his films, which a lot of Chinese films were like that, martial arts films, were all about revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a little bit different than that, you know. But no, I wouldn't change much about the film. I think it holds up very well. And that's one thing I think is the influence it's had. You talked about it. It's influenced everything from comedies to John Wick with the mirror scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's influenced. You could argue that Batman the Killing Joke is influenced because of the mirrors at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this we didn't even talk about the mirror fight, which is remarkably filmed for a low-budget movie made for under $1 million with no special effects in it. The mirror fight is really well shot. Cinematography-wise, directing-wise by Robert Klaus. I don't know who did the cinematography on the film, but it's a really cool scene. And
the movie could put
that scene up against a lot of action films today, and it holds up extremely well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to get much better, you know, to get in the same conversation as that scene, you'd have to pull stuff from, like, you know, maybe the two Taekwondo twins in Kiss of the Dragon, you know, with Jet Li, you know, stuff like that, Rumble in the Bronx, you know, even though it's campy, you know, the Street Fighter scene.
Right.
It's like you'd have to go to another martial artist to get in the same conversation. It's on another level.
When I watched it, the first time I ever saw Enter the Dragon, I was younger. I just liked Han's claw hand. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Being a fan of Wolverine, I'm like, oh, this is really freaking cool, you know? And to this day, I still love it. It's still really cool.
Han versus Wolverine. Who wins?
Wolverine.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, Han was badass, and he stands his own. It's funny that the scene works best when it gets to the mirror room, because the actor who plays Han, I don't have his name in front of me, doesn't seem like he's very similar to John Saxon. He doesn't have the martial arts training that Bruce Lee holds. So they it's a very tough name to say. But he must not have the martial arts training that Bruce had, because again, it's a John Sachs moment where they have to film him a certain way to make his kicks look faster and look better.
Yeah.
So the scene works better once they get to the mirror room. When they're fighting in the little museum part of his lair, it's like the scene's okay.
You can tell he's older, though.
Yeah, he gets a couple of shots on Bruce. You're like, yeah, really, that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. He would never touch Bruce, you know?
No.
And, but that's okay. So obviously the film's highly influential to today's films. You know, as far as collectibles, because something like we talked about Batman, this is a little bit different because it's an older film. There's been a lot of stuff produced over the years, mostly involving T-shirts and action figures. That's posters. About the most. Did you find anything really extremely unique collectible-wise?
I mean, maybe an original movie poster if you could find it. It's like, but that's like a friggin' needle in a haystack.
Talk about that though. I was looking when I was looking through Googling things about the film, man. Man, how cool are the 70s posters from any movie?
They're all awesome.
Now they Photoshop the crap out of stuff. It's all thrown together. Man, that was art in the 70s for films.
Even Barbarella had a good cover.
I know. It was fantastic. They got artists to do it. They drew it with their hands. They put it together. There was no computer Photoshop to put Tom Hanks' head here and Bruce Lee's head here and Bruce Willis's head here. You know, it was artwork. And that's what's really great about those 70s films. And even in the 80s and 90s, I think once we got late 90s and 2000s, well, the internet age, that's when the movie poster lost its art form.
The digital age.
There's still some good posters out there, but there's not as many that I anymore that really stand out. Yeah. You know, every now and then you get one, but, you know, overall. So, Bruce Lee expert, Matt, any other thoughts on this? Where does this stand for you as far as Bruce Lee films?
Number
What's your
one,
favorite?
Man.
It's your favorite?
Yeah, in the cave scene, people don't realize he took out 51 guys. And I guarantee you, if that were a real fight, it would have happened the same way, or maybe a little faster.
Yeah.
You know, so this is definitely a top Bruce Lee film. It showed, you know, how his mental state was about martial arts, his philosophy, his ability to act, and his depiction of Western action films, and, you know, just him kicking ass.
It's funny. It's people talk a lot about legacy of people that are important to history. You know, people that know me, I've probably never mentioned this podcast, but I'm a huge admirer of Jackie Robinson and the things he did. Him and Roberto Clemente both, you know, as far as baseball goes. And but Bruce's legacy is almost in a different way as big as theirs for what he did for Chinese people, for martial arts. Mm-hmm. And we're still feeling it today. They have the documentary series on Netflix, The Legend of Bruce Lee. I don't know if it's getting a season two, but I know it at least had a first season. We just had another Birth of the Dragon movie. It wasn't as well received.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting. Dragon, the Bruce Lee story is pretty good, but eventually don't you think we've got to eventually get a Walk the Line, Johnny Cash story type Bruce Lee biopic that's really well done?
Really?
It's got to happen eventually.
What's funny is the guy that played Bruce Lee in Dragon, a Bruce Lee story. Mm-hmm. He was a character in Balls of Fury.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's right. I remember that. And it's a good film. And it just shows you the influence of Bruce. And then his son looked to be that he was going to carry on the legacy. Brandon, of course, and he was tragically killed on the set of The Crow, which, it's funny. We'll probably be doing The Crow here in the next, the movie came out May 94.
Yeah.
So possibly in May around the anniversary. We don't want to, like, do all the big-time movies early, like Indiana Jones, Star Wars and stuff, but we might do some of our favorites early. Like, I want to do The Crow pretty soon because I'm really a big fan of that movie. Or we might even save it for Halloween time, you know, since it's more of a... It does fall in the horror vein. But it just makes you wonder what would have become of... And if Bruce had stayed alive with his son, Brandon, I'm sure they may have done a film together. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think Bruce was 42... when he passed. So he'd be in his he'd be almost in his late 80s now. But Brandon died in 93. So back then, he would have only been in his 60s. They could have done a film together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we might have seen it. And, you know, we have a great legacy of films from Bruce Lee that people can enjoy, our sons can enjoy. And I don't think it'll go anywhere. I think when you and I are long gone, 50 to 75 years from now, people will still talk about Bruce Lee.
Absolutely.
And that, I think that's the great thing about being alive in the times we're in between 1970 and 2018, is that we are in a golden legacy to enjoy movies that are influencing people that will never be seen again. There's never going to be a period in film like the ones we're alive in now, while Star Wars is out and things like that, and Bruce Lee, and to enjoy these films. You know, and that's the remarkable thing about being in the 21st century.
Yeah, I think the people that come after us are going to kind of be like, you know, man, you know, all those, like, kind of like how I am, I guess, you know, looking back and seeing how all these awesome, you know, sci-fi movies came out in the 80s.
Right.
And, you know, man, why couldn't I be there for that boom? You know, it's like, you know, obviously there were some superhero movies that were made back then that I was, you know, glad that I dodged, but it's like, you know, that won't be the case. Now, even the superhero movies are super notable. And, you know, who knows if they're, you know, where they'll go, you know, those movies going forward as those characters age. So, yeah, I think people, you know, the next coming generations are going to look back and be like, man, these guys, they grew up in an age of movies that, you know, will be revered for a long time.
Absolutely. And things will just change, too, with the advent of streaming, video on demand. I love going to the theater, but I think eventually it's going to phase out. I just get that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, it's, which is unfortunate. I think there will always be movie theaters, but it's going to slow down.
Yeah.
They're going to find a way to get that film to you the day it comes out on your television, and it's just the way it's going to go.
What if AMC made a Roku, and you had to pay, you paid a fee per year, and you had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, you know, as far as like HD recording.
So you wouldn't distribute it.
And you paid a smaller price per movie, and then you paid basically ticket price for the movie, and you could watch it in the privacy of your own home. That could be could come.
It could happen, so we'll see. We might be watching Bruce Lee films on demand one day. You know? Well, you can watch them on demand now. Amazon, and for people who don't know. If you're not familiar a lot with Bruce Lee's other work, Enter the Dragon's not available for streaming, but a lot of his films are. There's quite a few on Amazon Prime. Even though they need to fix their Chinese Connection. I was going to watch it, because just like I watched Batman Returns to go with Batman, I was going to watch Chinese Connection. The English subtitles don't work on it, or the dub.
Really?
You start watching it, it's in Chinese.
No.
And the subtitles don't work on it, or the English dub. So someone at Amazon needs to fix that, you know, but that's okay.
That's not good.
All right. Well, any final thoughts on Enter the Dragon before we talk about the latest news in the world of comics and movies and stuff?
No, that's pretty much it, man. It's like, you know, awesome film and gone too soon.
Yeah. So it's been kind of a slower week for news. There's a few things happening, though. First off, we got a trailer for Ant-Man and Wasp, which was kind of not unexpected, but like, well, okay, there's a trailer. Because I thought maybe they'd wait a little closer to Infinity War, but I guess it is coming out in July.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know, man, I just wasn't excited for it. I was just like, looks like... I like the bad guy, the ghost they chose.
Yeah.
The Hello Kitty Pez dispenser is pretty funny at the end.
Yeah, it surprised me.
I don't know, it just looks more of the same.
Yeah, it looked like maybe there would be some... Yeah, at least some different jokes. Kind of the same, but different.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with just, you know, with it not getting better, but not getting worse. And it's just kind of like just a different pace.
I think the best thing I like about it is, it's just seeing Michael Douglas working. He's always, we're talking about Bruce Lee films. Growing up, I watched a lot of Kirk Douglas films. He did a lot of Westerns and stuff. And he was an actor that I grew up watching. And then his son, Michael Douglas, did a lot of films I grew up watching. It's just great to see him working again, you know, and I think that's really cool. So they'll see Michael Douglas, but we'll see. Ant-Man and Wasp, I don't know. I'm sure they put it out because they want the trailer in theaters in front of Black Panther here in a couple of weeks. And I do like Evangeline Lilly, you know. I have a soft spot in my heart for her from watching Lost, you know.
Yeah.
This is all those years of devoting Lost and watching her play Kate on that show. So So it could be fun, you know. I didn't hate the first Ant-Man. I just didn't think it was that great. So, you know, I'll see where this one goes.
Where do you think this one will be? Better than Thor Ragnarok or worse? I think it's got to be a little better.
Hopefully better. I also wondered, it looks like it must take place before Infinity War.
Yeah.
But then someone made a point, too, saying that the reason there's no destruction or anything in the background is because someone said they think it takes place in California. That Marvel... And there's been rumors that Marvel's going to have some stuff take place on the West Coast, maybe a West Coast Avengers eventually.
Oh, okay. You know?
So maybe it takes place in California.
And it is. It looks like it's right after the airport scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. From Civil War.
Right, because he asked, "Would Cap call? Would you have helped?"
I really like the tower that turns into a rolling backpack.
That's cool.
That was cool.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about? Okay, they're making a big deal like boob armor. You know, Evangeline Lilly isn't. She's not huge chested, but like, she has it. Like, aren't we beyond that in 2018? Do we really need boob armor?
Well, I mean, let me look at the 95 bat suits.
It's like, with the nipples.
With the nipples and the big cod piece. It's like, it's always going to be, there's always going to be a little sexualization with your superheroes. It's like, you know, at least they don't look like these cosplayers that are going out there, you know, getting judged at Anime Matsuri or, you know, insert Comic-Con here, and they have their chest out with their J-cup, you know, thing, jugglies out. And, you know, so there is some humility there. Yeah, you could argue with the design, but, you know, it's always going to be there because, you know, we're always going to, you know, use, you know, sexualization of things to promote things.
Right.
And it's fine. We're used to it. You get older, you know, you're like, all right, it's a thing. You know, whatever. I'm pretty indifferent about it. You know, it don't get to me that
right. Well, that and you're just a closet perv.
Yeah, that too. But so I am biased.
So another trailer is coming by the time y'all hear this, it probably will be out. The Han Solo trailer is coming Monday on Good Morning America. We might get a preview Sunday during the Super Bowl. They haven't really confirmed yet, but it's definitely coming Monday on Good Morning America. And everyone's been wondering where the Solo, a Star Wars trailer, is with the movie coming out in May. And I told people, I almost wrote an article for TrustMeOnJedi.com about it, but then I decided not to. Do you really need 6 to 8 months to promote a Star Wars film? And that doesn't mean that the movie's That's in true. Trouble. It's yeah. fucking Star Wars. It's gonna blow gangbusters. It's gonna be huge Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
In fact, we have Comp Palooza that weekend, so we're gonna have to squeeze in a Thursday night screening probably of Solo since we're gonna be at Comp Palooza.
Oh, I am requesting that week off.
And but that's why I told people it doesn't need months of promoting. You just came out of Last Jedi, which was huge, just like the last couple of Star Wars movies.
Mm-hmm.
You just need a trailer and maybe another trailer in April or May, and that's it. That's all you need for Han Solo. You know, I don't think you need this giant, huge promotional campaign for it, and the film will be just fine. I have every faith in the world that Ron Howard came in and he put together a better film than was being made, and I can't wait till Monday.
Yeah, man. Finally, we're getting this trailer, but you made a good point. I never thought of it that way. Do you really have to promote Star Wars 6 months out? You don't. You could release that trailer 2 weeks before the movie came out.
It'll be huge. People know it's coming. It'll happen. I do think it's interesting that Fox moved Deadpool into May, because now you have Infinity War, Deadpool, and Star Wars. It's a busy month. What was wrong with Deadpool being in June?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, just I don't understand. I don't get what Fox was thinking there, being sandwiching themselves between two huge Disney films. You know, I don't know. Maybe they were thinking that they'll grab the audience and once it rated R film. It could backfire on Deadpool. It could end up making Deadpool have a huge opening weekend. Then Solo comes out and people forget about Deadpool.
Exactly.
I thought that was an interesting choice by Fox to do that.
I think that's exactly what will happen. You'll see a big opening weekend. Maybe I think it'll cross 100. I think it'll be low 100, 100, 105. But then you're gonna see a big drop, man. I think it'll drop into like the 60s.
And before we go to download this, man, what do you think about the tracking for Black Panther's tracking to $150-$160 million opening weekend? That's Star Wars level almost. Yeah. That's huge.
No, that is.
It could be one of the biggest comic book openings of all time. There's a lot of celebrities getting into this and buying tickets for inner city kids and young African American children that don't have opportunity to go see it. They're buying tickets for them. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. You know?
Give him a chance to see. Man, I wish I would have wrote down celebrity names. I kind of did this on the fly here. I know there's a wrestler that's buying tickets for kids. There's a guy I read about in Harlem. He's like an investor of some sort. He was taking a bunch of kids from the Boys and Girls Clubs in Harlem to the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome, you know, because, man, it looks great. The early reactions are really good. And I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, dude. It's like.
And people who listen to Rebel Radio know I become kind of jaded with Marvel films. But this one, I'm pumped for.
Yeah, Black Panther, Avengers, Deadpool, all of them. Man.
Yeah,
it's like Ant-Man and Wasp is probably the one that I'm probably going to lose in translation.
Right,
I might be marveled out. You know, I might be just geeked out.
If Frank was here, he'd be like, oh, "I'm just tired of comic book movies. I'm not going to go see him." And he goes and sees him anyway.
I know, right? He's going to go stay at home and watch the Titanic.
Yeah, probably so. Or what is that show he watches? Downtown Abbey.
Downtown Abbey. Yes.
And speaking of shows he watches, download this. Is what we streamed, watched lately. I finished The Defenders, which I thought was really good. Have you finished it?
I did. I finished it a few months ago. I was good and finished it.
I can't wait to see Daredevil season 3 now because of it.
Yeah, and we need a trailer for Daredevil season 3.
Well, yeah, we're filming now, so hopefully soon. That's really all I finished lately since last we recorded. I'm looking forward to watching Altered Carbon, the new show on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
I'm probably going to watch it tonight. I'll watch the first couple episodes. And other than watching Enter the Dragon for our show and finishing Defenders, I think that's all I've watched. You know, have you downloaded, streamed anything?
I downloaded an app because, okay, so I missed my Mustang. I had a Ford Mustang. And I was like, man, it'd be really cool to have one for my cousin's wedding. And so there's an app, and it's called Turo, T-U-R-O. And what you can do, you can actually do this with your own car, even if you don't have a really nice car. So I've seen Nissan Sentras on there. But if you want to rent a car for a day, these are other people's cars, and they'll just let you rent them for a day.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it's like, I can rent a Ford Mustang, a 2018. There's a guy with a 2018 GT Mustang. It's a little pricey. It's $130 a day. But it has exhaust, intake,
performance. But you don't need to redrive a Mustang.
No, I don't need to redrive a Mustang. But I was like, man, you know, I was like, at first I was like, I'm going to do this. As soon as I get income tax, I'm going to reserve it.
No,
I was like,
not.
And I'm going to drive a freaking Mustang to
you're not going
to
do that because your wife's going to kick your ass.
And then I was like, man, that's a... said, you know what? That could be a cell phone bill. So I'm like, that's how I think now. So, you know, you got all these kids. You got to start being more responsible, unfortunately. So...
Well, that's what we've streamed or downloaded lately on Download This, brought to you by no one, because we need someone to sponsor that segment.
We need
to be like a radio show, you know?
Yeah, like a kilt, maybe a kilt provider maker.
No. I'm good. So next time on Rebel Radio, the next movie we're going to do is a 2002 film from director Kurt Wimmer and starring Christian Bale, pre-Batman Begins.
Yes, and Boromir.
He had done American Psycho already, but Bale wasn't a household name yet.
No.
But we're going to do the sci-fi film Equilibrium,
yes,
which is a huge favorite of mine, one of my favorite movies of the last 20 years.
And it's Ty Diggs after he helped Stella get her groove back.
Is it Tay or Ty?
Ty Diggs, yeah.
And who's fantastic in the movie.
Yes,
when we talk about performances, when we talk about his film, he's good. The action sequences of this movie are incredibly done. And the funny thing is, there's maybe 10 minutes of action in the whole film. But it's 10 minutes of some of the best action you'll ever see.
Yeah.
So if you want to do your homework before then, watch Equilibrium. I don't know. It's not available streaming, but you can find it in the $5 bins in Walmart. I know that.
Absolutely.
You know, but a fantastic film. And that's what we're going to bring you next week on the Rebel Radio Podcast. We're going to bring you Equilibrium from 2002. Until then, that's all I've got. Go to trustmemojaya.com for latest news and for the Rebel Radio Podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, any of your podcast apps. And that's all I've got. Until next time.
This has been Matt.
This has been Mark. And thank you for listening as always. Just go there and do it.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
The cleric is the final line of defense. If the resistance compromises it, we are doomed.
There's nothing we can't do.
It's real. Burn it.
Cleric, I can only hope one day to be as uncompromising as you. You're a family man.
Yes, sir, a boy and a girl.
Arrest. Remember me.
Welcome to the underground. Do you know why you came?
Yes. They trained you your whole life to fight these kind of odds.
What can I do?
I've heard the most disturbing rumor.
Rumor, sir.
A rumor maintaining that one of the cleric is actually attempting to contact the resistance.
Then you know what I'm gonna do now.
Yeah. Preston, give yourself entirely without incident.
No, not without incident.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and this is Rebel Radio
podcast.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?